From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Bruce Mackler, PhD, JD, scientist, attorney, and expert on FDA issues, is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about recent developments at the FDA and for some insights on how biopharmaceutical companies can work more efficiently with the agency.
Dr. Bruce Mackler is a senior advisor on FDA matters and due diligence issues to financial groups and investment companies. With 28 years of FDA legal and regulatory experience, he has a keen understanding of how the agency functions. Dr. Mackler has worked with numerous biotech and pharmaceutical companies in helping to move their products from the laboratory into animal and human testing and onto FDA marketing submissions. Dr. Mackler, how would you rate the current performance of the FDA?
I think looking at the reality of the FDA today, it's understaffed, underfunded, overworked, and looking over its shoulders at Congress, concerned about being able to fully justify its actions because of the increasing congressional concern about safety, drug approval process, and such. So I think the FDA obviously really needs to have adequate funding to adequately get staff. One of the problems, which we'll discuss possibly with Dr. Woodcock, I believe the word is that she has 600 empty positions in CDER, 400 in terms of the review staff, and 200 in terms of the new safety field inspectors. So that problem really does affect the current performance, as we can see by the number of NDA approvals, and also more likely by the continuing recycling of a number of applications in there. This is particularly in the generic area, where sometimes it takes 18 to 30 months to get an ANDA out because of just continuing recycling by the staff. So I think these are the problems that FDA and Congress have to deal with. It is interesting that even the commissioner recently said in testifying in front of Congress that even if he was given all of the money he wanted, he couldn't digest it this year. So they obviously have severe infrastructure and management issues in terms of being able to utilize any increased resources as well.
What are the main criticisms you hear from biotech and pharma officials about their dealings with the agency?
The biggest complaint I hear is the perception by pharma, biotech, and financial groups of the lack of predictability in terms of a perception that the regulatory requirements are changing, and therefore products, when they begin the process, are subject to one set of requirements versus when they end. The reality is that this may not be a valid perception. Even though FDA does change, it does telegraph its moves if you pay attention. And I think also FDA has to develop a reasonable rationale and need when it changes its position. Probably one of the biggest impacts FDA has done in the antibiotic area is moving to a non-inferiority statistical requirement, whereas some companies had already started their clinical studies with an agreement for a different statistical package, and FDA changed the rules during the clinical study. So, therefore, companies need to pay attention. They need to read the nuances of what people say at FDA and what the problems they're encountering.
How does FDA usually react to criticism, and how responsive is the agency to suggestions for improvement?
Well, I think it depends who makes the suggestions. Obviously, if Congress makes the suggestions, FDA does pay attention, at least appears to pay attention. Traditionally, FDA tends to be defensive. Yet, they have been moving forward in a number of areas, but many times they move forward, but they keep looking over their shoulder as to what are the consequences in Congress what are the consequences in terms of the industry and internationally. So they try to respond, and they try to address the concerns, but it is not one where one sees giant movements. One sees incremental small movements that have been well thought out, well documented, and they feel safe in making. You should not expect FDA to make major program regulatory changes unless they respond to safety issues that they have to act very quickly.
You mentioned Dr. Janet Woodcock before, and she had been acting head of the FDA Center for Drug Evaluation, also known as CDER, since last September. In March, she was named CDER's permanent director, a job she held in the mid-1990s. Why do you think Dr. Woodcock returned to CDER?
Well, one, I think Dr. Galvin, who was previously the director of CDER, was actually Dr. Woodcock's choice, and she had really picked him and put him there. A lot of the problems that CDER has had have been laid at Dr. Galvin's doorstep. To some extent, I think Dr. Woodcock was, from the commissioner's office, was sent back to solve the problems, since some of those were laid to her choice of candidate. More importantly, I think Dr. Woodcock was selected because she was there, she knows drugs, and she knows biologics. And there are a number of issues that Dr. Woodcock probably is one of the optimum choices to really solve. Originally, when Dr. Woodcock was at CDER, she was sent in to really address the consistency and to bring in the divisions into a consistent pattern. That's why she put Dr. Paul Lieber on one side of her office, who was head of Neuropharm, and Dr. Ray Lepicki on the other side of her office, who was cardiovascular. So she would have direct oversight of them and could keep her eye on them. So she is a problem solver. She is perceived as to help resolve issues in CDER previously, and I think this was where the commissioner, in his very elegant and flattering letter about why he was so happy that Dr. Woodcock was going back to CDER as director, sort of intimated that she could address the problems, and the problems are rather severe.
That leads to my next question. Earlier you talked about staffing problems. What are some of the other main challenges and problems Dr. Woodcock faces at CDER?
Let me start with the staffing and the consequences of the severely understaffed. In the fall, Dr. John Jenkins sent around a memo saying that they were going to have a two-month delay in meeting their PDUFA deadlines. So therefore, rather than 10 months, they were now going to 12 months. And the rationale for this was that they were understaffed and they were not able, because of the understaffing, to meet PDUFA. This really raises a major issue, because if they're understaffed, that really means that the reviewers now, who are very focused on safety, not to allow a product out there which has any reasonable safety concerns that they have not adequately addressed in the record, so they won't be held accountable as not doing their job if there is a congressional issue. So this means that the reviewers are really overstressed in meeting their deadlines. This is one of the reasons I believe that most of the NDAs are recycled. That means they reach the timeline for PDUFA, and then they're asked a series of questions. And sometimes there are two or three recycled in the approval process. Now, these are called approvable letters. So it's approvable with this additional data, and the clock doesn't start till you give us the data. And this may occur at least once, sometimes twice, and sometimes even three times. So staffing is a really major, has a major impact on the flow of NDAs.
Any other issues she needs to face?
Yes. One, the new FDAAA Act has a number of provisions that really need to be addressed. One of them is on the use of peer-reviewed journals for off-label products, which requires, I believe, some promulgation of new regulations under the Administrative Procedure Act. this has really been a sore spot with the pharmaceutical industry and one of the reasons that they lobbied to have this provision put in. And that's going to take 2 or 3 years, and how they're going to resolve that is going to be extremely challenging. Also, the implementation of the congressionally mandated Drug Safety Institute program to restore confidence that FDA can catch drug safety problems early after the approval of the drug. This is not only the phase 4, which is a growing requirement for NDA approval, but also looking at the data that comes in from clinicians on adverse events and assessing that to see if there's an early trend in terms of safety concerns. The other, I believe, is a real hidden issue. In BioConference 2007, Dr. Galvin was the director of CDER at that time, was asked a question about what is the regulatory approval criteria CDER is using to oversee the approval of drugs and the licensing of biologics. His statement was very telling. Basically, Dr. Gallant said, we're only going to use one standard. That means he implied that the drug standard is going to be used for biologics. Those companies who are in CDER for their biologics, monoclonal antibodies, fusion proteins, etc., are already seeing the impact of this. Two pivotal studies, much more drug-like requirements. I believe that Dr. Woodcock, who was also at CBER, the Biologics Center, and then at CDER, understands the difference. And it will be very interesting how Dr. Woodcock resolves the apparent conflict between the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and the Public Health Service Act, which really, the Public Health Service Act only requires one pivotal study. Those of us who have been working in the trenches in CDER know that they're requiring two pivotal studies now. So I think Dr. Woodcock will be more sensitive on this statutory quagmire. I also believe that Dr. Woodcock will work very hard to get the critical path initiative back on track. There had been an inflow of $11 million. It was spent to address, I believe, a certain cardiovascular area. The program needs funds. It also needs how to train the reviewers to really allow this type of early, what we call phase zero or exploratory IND. More importantly, I think Dr. Woodcock is going to have to address the morale problem, not only hiring new people who are competent, but retaining those people who are competent and getting them to feel that the administration, the senior people, are supporting them in their decisions. So I think Dr. Woodcock has a tremendous number of challenges. We should not expect her to be able to overcome these challenges in 1 year, possibly 2 years. I think this will be a continuous process of whittling away at these problems, which Dr. Woodcock is very good at, given her prior experience.
My final question is, FDA's main mission is to oversee the safety and efficacy of biotech and pharmaceutical drugs. As you know, pharma officials often complain that the agency can be too restrictive in carrying out its watchdog role. Based on your experience, what are some key tips you would offer to these officials so that they can work with FDA in the best manner possible for both sides?
Let me put this in context. I think it's not only the pharma officials. I think it's also the financial groups who fund the companies are all saying the same thing. And I think from experience, first, I can give a number of insights. One would be to look at the problems your competitors having with products in the same class, in the same family, for the same indication, because the reviewers are doing that. They're very aware of other products' problems and want to make sure that your product does not have the same problems. So you can make sure, you can anticipate, and it is an issue of anticipation. I think the other thing is the ability to be adequately self-critical of your own preclinical and clinical data. Do not be your own champion, but be your own critic. Make sure that data addresses the concerns, not only addresses the concern, but also is in compliance with good clinical practice at the sites. I had seen a couple approvable letters saying that products are approvable based on resolution of clinical site issues, which really mean data issues. Also, a lot of companies go in after they've done their phase three, they rush in for their pre-NDA or pre-BLA filing meeting and show their data. The data looks beautiful. The data is compelling. It's statistically valid based on their quick analyses. They submit the BLA or the NDA, then all of a sudden FDA is going through the data and starts tossing it out. There are too many deviations with this patient, deviation with that patient. Therefore, your level of statistical significance starts to change. And a number of companies have had this problem. So I think being self-critical to a high extent will help. The other third tip would be to always try to understand the FDA's underlying concerns. It's not what they say, it's why they ask the question. What is the rationale underlying the question? Because sometimes you try to answer the question, but you fail because there's an underlying rationale that you really don't. And this leads to a great miscommunication between FDA. That FDA says, well, why aren't they answering the question? And the company says, we've answered it. And I've seen that a number of times. Also, try to understand the concerns of the reviewer. In this environment, it's very hard to develop a good dialogue with reviewers as it was 10 years ago. However, when you are talking to the reviewer, do ask them questions. Try to get to the underlying issues, which are really of concern. Many times they'll work with you and they'll say, here's what we really want to see. And I think one of the most important things is to really listen to what FDA is saying in their public statements, in their meeting presentations, which are all available, and look for and anticipate shifts. And when you see a shift, the question is, did you anticipate it? Why didn't you anticipate it? And what will be the impact? And I believe that one can ameliorate the perception that FDA is being too restrictive based on a good strategy of continued understanding of where the agency is. All too often, a company goes into FDA, they want a pre-IND meeting. You don't have pre-IND meetings very often now. You have telephone conversations. And once they've stated what they're going to do, they file it in the IND, and then it's written in stone. Because the venture people want to see a layout of what you're going to do so they can assess risk. I think what companies really have to come to realize is that the FDA process is a dynamic process. Everything keeps changing, and you need to understand, do you need to change with the FDA changes, and how will these FDA issues impact?
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.